It's June 22nd, 2006, and we are the Image Doctors on Nikonians Talk Radio. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks again for joining us for another exciting episode of all things photography.
And Nikon.
And Nikon. What we got on tap for today, Rick?
Well, several different topics. We're going to talk a little bit about future episodes first, I think, and just what's coming up, and certainly if anyone
kind of
has
like
any ideas
list.
And feedback. Yeah, it's our to-do list for sure. So that way we can let you know
right.
what we're planning and if you have any ideas for
We've been getting
topics.
Emails. Again, you can email us at talkradio@nikonians.org if you got a suggestion. We try to answer all our emails. You can post in the podcast feedback forum on the Nikonians discussion area at www.nikonians.org. Mm-hmm. And then
we're going to talk a little bit about DxO.
Reviewed DxO
RAW
Optics Pro
conversion programs.
Yep, another RAW converter / workflow program. And then we have a little mini product review of the Gary Fong LightSphere,
mm-hmm.
which we talked about a couple of episodes ago, and we mentioned that we'd review it this week. I let NAS kick in and buy one, and then mm-hmm. you went out and ordered one too.
Yeah, I haven't gotten mine yet. I put in my order from the Pro Shop, our own
mm-hmm.
Pro Shop.
Coincidentally, the Nikonians Pro Shop started carrying this product
yeah.
about a week ago, and they're waiting yep. for their first shipment.
Yeah,
I actually bought it before I knew anything about the Pro Shop carrying this. But
yep. whereas I was a nice guy by comparison, and
right, support the community
yep.
buy from the Pro Shop. Yep. And I should mention, talking about supporting our sponsors, that today we're brought to you by Roberts Imaging, www.robertsimaging.com. And they are an authorized Nikon professional dealer. They've been in business since 1957. And if you're looking to indulge your NAS on a new lens or a new camera, give the friendly folks at Roberts a call or check out their website.
Yep. Thank you, Roberts.
Thank you.
Okay, so those are our topics for today. Let's talk a little bit about the to-do list.
Yeah, we've got a laundry list of things to do, and these are because we keep hearing the same suggestions coming up.
Yep.
And one of the first ones that we will attempt to do is a comparison, a lens shootout, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Between the 17-55 DX, the 28-70 AFS, and the 17-35-28 AFS.
Yeah.
And all of these are very good pro lenses. They all cost more or less the same, plus or minus a
few hundred.
Few yeah. hundred.
They're all expensive. They're all 2.8 aperture lenses.
And until the 17-55 came out, we didn't really have this question because it was mostly shooting film. The 28-70 and 17-35 were definitely designed for film bodies, but they have some applications in the digital side
yep.
as well.
Yep. But we'll talk about all of that.
Yep. We
well
also want to spend some time in a future episode talking about that fun topic called sharpening, how to do it, how much to do it, what are some good settings to use, where do you sharpen, what program do you use, what are some options for you. We
That's
could spend
been
an entire
a bit
show.
Of,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a black art in a lot of people's minds when it comes to the digital stuff. And
right.
once you get down something that you're comfortable with, things work great,
bad.
But up until that point, it could be kind of frustrating. So we'll talk about alternatives there and
right.
what works well for us. We'll probably spend a little bit of time on general workflow issues. We've talked a little bit about that in the past, but we'll talk a bit
right.
more about it.
Just sort of how you go about
yeah.
setting yourself up. Everybody who shoots digital should have a workflow, whether it's something that you've thought about directly or not. Is another question, but
doesn't have to be elaborate either.
No, but you should get something and you should get good at it. And we'll talk about what we do.
Yeah.
And we've been hearing requests to talk about what equipment you should use for landscape shots.
Yeah.
And Rick's a big landscape photographer, more so than me. So we thought we could talk about that one.
So this will be kind of analogous to the wildlife one that we did a long
right.
time
what
ago.
Right. What do I get? What's a basic
yeah.
kit for landscapes? And,
yeah.
and those of you who've been complaining that we break your bank. The good news is that you can set up a pretty good landscape kit for
yeah.
a much smaller budget.
Than wildlife, for sure, and it'll work well.
And we have had some requests to do sort of a live haha, you know, podcast as live as we want it to be, considering they're all pre-recorded,
yeah.
where we're actually out on a photo shoot. And we're looking for some stuff where that would be a good option. One of the things that we're going to try is to kill two birds with one stone and talk about being on a live shoot and talk about sports. We've had a bunch of requests. Can you guys talk more about sports? Well, neither Rick or myself are sports photographers.
No. But we're willing to learn.
We are willing to learn. And so just to satisfy our listeners' desires, we've been in touch with the local minor league baseball affiliate here in Colorado Springs, not too far from the Mountain Lair.
That's right.
We happen to have the AAA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies here in town.
Called the Sky Sox.
The Colorado Springs Sky Sox. And you can check out their webpage, on their minor league baseball site. But we're hoping to get some press credentials to shoot a Sky Sox game in a couple of weeks. So hopefully our next episode on July 6th will have live fumbling through a sports shoot, yeah. Image doctor style.
Yeah, and it looks like we'll probably be doing that on the 2nd. And it looks like we'll be able to get down on the field and all that kind of stuff. So,
and we can learn all about monopod technique and all those.
All that good stuff. It'll be
high
fun.
High ISO shooting and everything that we never really mess
yeah.
with.
And again, we're not going to say that we're experts on this. So what we'll talk about in that podcast is what we learned, what we found out, and
right.
what worked for us, and probably a little bit of what didn't work, too.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of what didn't work. Yep.
Yeah. And then the last thing that we've discussed is we're planning to go shoot some mountain goats, shoot them with a camera. Up on Mount Evans, which is just a few hours away from Colorado Springs. It's up outside of Denver. It's one of the great locations in the world, actually, for photographing mountain goats. A lot of times if you see mountain goat photos, that's where they're taken. And I've photographed them up there a bunch of times, but you never have. So
the issue is kind of having a guarantee, you know, if I go to place X at time Y, will I have a high probability of finding wildlife? As with all wildlife subjects, that's really the key. And from what I've heard, Mount Evans is as close a thing to a guarantee as you'll get.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to pull that off in the next
couple months.
Obviously, this is more than one episode's worth of stuff.
Yeah, so I think so.
This is going to keep us busy for a while. But keep the suggestions coming. We appreciate them very much.
Yeah.
So let's spend a few minutes with our little mini review of the Lightsphere inverted dome system. I found it about 2 months ago. I found a reference to it, and I hemmed and hawed, and then I bought it. And I bought it for one reason only. It was I didn't want to invest in a full flip frame flash bracket system for getting decent portraits in the vertical mode on my camera. I wanted to be able to shoot with my SB800 on the flash shoe. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever done portraits and you use direct flash or even try bouncing, you know that especially when you flip the camera into the vertical or portrait orientation, you get some pretty bad shadows.
Yeah, sometimes bounce works pretty well. A lot of it just depends
tricky.
On the room that you're in. If you have a high ceiling, it's not going to work well. If you've got walls that are painted something other than white or off-white,
that can
it's
be
not going to work well. You don't want to have that bounce coming off of a red wall.
And the other challenge with bounce sometimes is that it can create some very unnatural looking shadows underneath eye sockets.
Yeah, sometimes it's fine.
Sometimes it's okay, and sometimes your subject just kind of looks a little sunken-eyed look. And,
yeah.
And you know, direct flash, you won't get that, but it does cast harsh shadows.
Yeah.
So this is a product that would be geared for event or wedding photographers in general, or simple portraits, you know, if you're not looking to set up a full studio with umbrellas and,
right.
And you only have one flash, this might be something to think about.
It's kind of an interesting little gizmo. Almost looks like you have a chandelier sitting on your camera flash.
Yeah, or I think of it as almost like a Tupperware container
yeah.
or something like that. So it's a big diffuser.
Made out of plastic, kind of flexible, but not too flexible.
It's almost like rubber, plastic
right.
rubber. It's silicone almost.
Yeah, you can't collapse it completely.
But it mushes.
Yeah, it mushes a little.
And then it just slips right on to the front of your flash head. And they make them in different sizes, so not only the Nikon flashes, but all of the Canon flashes too. That this is a product that's sort of generic. You get their one size that you need.
So if you picture this bowl-shaped thing sitting on your flash, it also comes with a cap that can go over the top of it if you wish, or you can remove it if you want the flash to come up through the top and potentially bounce off
and,
of it.
And the cap is
kind of
like your plastic Tupperware lid. It's diffuse plastic, and it's a concave shape, so it's a dome, but the dome goes down into the bowl of the diffuser. Mm-hmm. And when you buy this product, it comes with a little training video and gives you some examples of how to use it. And so, you know, I think for $50, it's not bad.
No. Well,
we tested it out this morning.
Yeah. We had a chance to make some shots under a variety of conditions, both indoors and outdoors, and, you know, comparing it against bounce and direct and, you know, just a variety of different things.
Right.
It worked very well.
Yeah. And the ease of use from alternating between a landscape or horizontal aspect and the portrait or vertical aspect is kind of cool. The way that it's recommended that you set up your flash is you have your SB800 and then you point it, the flash head straight up. Then you twist the flash head on the axis, the pivot axis, 90 degrees. So now the flash is the axis of the long axis of the flash is going to be pointing toward your subject, and you got this dome on top. Since you got this dome, it really doesn't matter.
Now I'm sure at this point everyone is thinking, what did Jason just?
What
say?
Did I just say? Yeah. Point your flash up and turn it. You know, so the other way of doing it is turn your flash to point to the side and then flip it vertical.
Right.
Flip it up. If you do that, you can then just pivot. Use the pivoting. The up down pivot, the little button on the side of the SB800 that you push in, you know, when you want to point the flash up, mm-hmm. you can use that as a pivot point to flip your camera. See, I'm talking with my hands now. I'm pulling a Rick, and I'm talking with my hands. You guys can't see this, but I'm demonstrating this live as we speak right now. You just can't see it happen. The bottom line is, if you buy the product, it'll come with pretty good instructions.
Yeah,
and it'll tell you how to do it.
I think here's the important thing is if you compare the images made with it in place to direct flash or bounce flash, it is clearly of higher quality if you're shooting portraits mm-hmm. and you want that nice, softer, well-diffused look without the ugly shadows under the eyes. It produces clearly better results.
Right. It is very similar to what you'd get with a bounce flash, except you don't get those weird shadows.
And you don't have the issues due to room variations mm-hmm. that we were talking about earlier.
It offers some flexibility, not just in its construction. Because this diffuser dome on top is removable, if you are shooting in a room with a high ceiling, they recommend you remove that. If you're shooting outdoors and you want to use it as a fill flash, you can point the dome right at the subject and you use the diffuser on. So then you have a big, what amounts to be just a gigantic diffusion dome pointing directly at your subject, which works for fill flash. We took some pictures with it today, and we're going to post these in a thread. I'll probably put a bunch of JPEGs up there showing the with and without.
Just so you can see what we're talking about. Right. It is hard to...
And we'll post those in the thread, in the podcast feedback forum.
Yeah. So from what we've seen, it's a good product. It works well. I think it produces better results than some of the other things that I've used, like some of the little clip-on diffuser things that will bounce part of your flash forward as well as allow some to go up and mm-hmm. bounce off of a ceiling. Definitely produces better results than that. So
it definitely has a low-tech charm to it.
Yeah.
But it fits right on the flash. It's good. You know, it's sturdy. It's
simple
built well.
Is good.
Simple is good. And so we would recommend that if this is the kind of shooting that you find yourself doing and you don't want to spend a ton of money on other fancy setups. And what's even better now is you can buy it direct from Nikonians and support the community by buying this from our pro shop.
Yeah, coincidentally, that just popped up during the time between when we decided to do this review and
literally in the last week or so. Just,
but that's good.
Hey, cool. We'll spend the rest of the time on talking about our... We're almost through all the RAW converters. We've got DXO, and we still have to do Adobe Camera Raw.
Right.
So today is going to be DXO, which is called DXO Optics Pro, And it comes in three flavors, Optix Pro Starter, Optix Pro Standard, and Optix Pro Elite. We had the opportunity to test Optix Pro Elite, and actually, unless you're shooting a Coolpix 8800, you probably wouldn't want to get anything below Optix Pro Standard.
Really, the only difference is which camera bodies
the
product supports.
And
it's the same software.
And DxO is different from the other RAW converters for this reason. It goes after trying to make the best possible image correction from a particular body and lens combination. That's the difference. I mean, if you were to say, what is the biggest difference between this RAW converter and all the other ones, is that to convert a RAW file with DxO, it has a list of supported camera bodies, and then for even better results, it has a list of supported lenses that match with that camera body.
Right.
If you're not using one of the supported bodies, you're not going to convert RAW files. If you don't have one of the supported lenses with that body, you will get a limited suite of options.
Now, one important point is that the Nikon bodies that it supports are really just the newer ones.
That's correct.
So if you have a D1 series camera, it will not support the RAW processing.
Right.
D100 it won't. D2H it won't. However, the D70 series, both the original and the S,
the
D200, the D50, the D2X, the D2HS.
There's no D2H support of any kind,
yeah,
actually,
true.
On this,
that is true.
Which is one of the... Now, it does support JPEGs from the D2H and JPEGs from the D100, but that sort of defeats the RAW conversion.
Yeah.
We're talking about RAW converters, so we kind of leave those off the list.
Right.
The standard version supports all of the bodies except the D2X, and that's $149. If you have a D2X, you're going to need to purchase the Elite version, which is $299 US. I don't know what it is in Euro, but you go to the DxO.com website, you can find out.
Right.
So that's our caveat with this. Without getting into too much detail, if you're not using one of the supported cameras and then the supported lenses, your feature set may be reduced. That this might not be what you want to use.
Right. So definitely get on their website, check the list of lenses and camera bodies.
And if that's what you have, then this becomes an option.
And you need to verify that lens and camera combination is supported. It's not just a generic list of lenses.
That is correct.
Yeah.
I did notice that they do have some support for third-party lenses, like the Sigma 10-20 has been added. So that's cool. I downloaded that module, and I haven't played with it yet, so I have to try that one. So what's our general impression of it? Let's start with the interface, how you go about doing a RAW,
By the way, one thing that we should mention, too, is, we've been using all of these RAW converters now for several months and trying them out. So we've been using DxO for some time. But we also got someone else's opinions, too. We talked to Bob Johnson a little bit. He's been Bob J on our site, who has the very nice earthboundlight.com website. You may have seen that.
Right.
But he chatted with us a little bit about how he's been using it, thoughts, too. So we actually had a third opinion, which was very nice and very helpful.
And
so
thank you, Bob, for doing that. We really appreciate that.
So, general, let's talk about pros and cons and start off with the pros first. I think one thing that we see and Bob saw as well from using it is if you have one of the lens and camera body combinations that it supports, the results are very good. And
that's right.
What it will do is it will automatically load in some distortion correction parameters, handle barrel as well as pin cushion distortion, and that works quite well. It will also load in corrections for chromatic aberration. So if you're seeing a little bit of that color fringing, usually off in the periphery of the image, and it shows up most with wide angle lenses, wide angle zooms, things like that. So that will get loaded in automatically. It does a very good job on that. Pretty similar to what we see with Capture, I'm finding in general, which does an excellent job. So both of those products work quite well. So DxO is up there in the forefront. And comparing it, the image quality, in those areas where you have chromatic aberration to a tool that doesn't support it, and most of the RAW converters at this point don't, you'll see a distinct improvement.
Yeah, it can
in
do
image
a very
quality.
Good job with that.
Yeah.
And it has some other things that it does too for supported lenses, like removing the, you know, pin cushion and barrel distortion.
Well, we already, yeah, we
yeah. I mean, and the other converters don't do that in an automatic way,
right?
Tuned to that lens, so
it will also load in sharpening parameters that vary across the area of the image, which is interesting. In other words, if you had a lens that was appreciably sharper in the center than at the edge,
it would correct it.
It will put in a little bit higher sharpening toward the edge, and that's kind of a cool concept. Mm-hmm. And you can see a little bit of that going on, in particular with, I found it with lenses like the 10.5 millimeter fisheye. You can see that extra sharpening mm-hmm. starting to kick in, and it'll even it out across the image. So again, just to restate what we were just talking about, if you have the lens and camera combination that it supports,
right,
it does a very good job on all those.
It has
points.
Noise removal, which I haven't needed to use too much, but
I've used it some for ISO 800 images with the D2X, and it works well.
And then another thing that another major tool that it has is the DxO lighting
right
module, which is similar to the image enhancing or the delighting in Capture or the shadow highlight feature in Photoshop. Similar, but not the same.
No, and you can have it set up to kick in automatically just as part of your normal image.
And sometimes
processing.
That produces a pleasing result.
Yeah, it just varies. Like all automatic settings, you're going to get some variation on it. And sometimes you'll like what it does. If you're us, and you know from what we've seen so far, sometimes we like it. Sometimes we don't. It varies a little bit. So I think you'll have to develop your own thoughts on that
right.
and see what you think.
And we've said this before. We'll say it again today. We've been trying all these raw converters. We're by no means experts with any of them. You know, spending a month or a couple of weeks with a raw converter every day is really the only way to really start to dial them in. No matter what product we're talking about.
Yeah, and also it's a little bit like film. All right, what's the best film? Well, there isn't such a thing. It really depends on the kind of images that you're producing, the shooting conditions, and your own individual mm-hmm. preferences. The different raw converters will produce different results.
Right.
The colors will be a little bit different. How they handle noise will be a little bit different. Contrast levels. So it's true with all of these.
One thing I liked about the conversions is that I certainly didn't see any evidence of demosaicing artifacts in the...
Right. We've seen that with some
or
others.
Or Moiré.
Yeah. It was clean.
The conversions were very clean. So that was very good. And I think it does some stuff on... It does increase contrast in ways that can bring out certain textures and certain images. But I wasn't seeing it doing it in a consistent kind of way, so I'm not really sure from my limited experience.
Yeah.
You know, I could have one image where DxO did a great job in terms of giving me an image that just made certain things pop that other converters just didn't do.
Right.
And then another image where I got more or less the same result that I could have gotten anywhere. So... You know, it's hard to say a priori which images would work best for this converter, but it didn't do a bad job with any of them.
No.
So that's the important thing. It does a good job in general.
Right.
The auto settings require a little bit of blind faith.
Yeah, and you don't want to use the stronger ones. That's true with almost all the raw mm-hmm. converters, at least for images that are to my taste. You know, if you use the stronger settings, they definitely
right.
look overcooked.
Right, that's for sure. You can start to see a little bit too much contrast sometimes
right.
in certain areas.
Yeah, so the more conservative settings work a little bit better. On the con side, I think the interface is a little bit awkward at times. One of the things that we found a little bit frustrating was the histogram. It was not easy to use that in conjunction with the manual settings. That was a little bit awkward just because of its positioning and the way it's set up.
And if you want to do a levels or tone curve adjustment, there's no histogram in that levels window.
Right.
So if you imagine the levels control in Photoshop, for those of you who've used it, you know you get a histogram and you can move the little sliders to the points on the histogram. With the DxO option, that's not there yet.
Right.
And it could be coming out in as an update in a new version or something, but right now it's not there.
Yeah. The other thing, and it kind of harkens back to what we were talking about with the lens and camera modules. If you're using a mix of supported and unsupported lenses, then your settings will have to change fairly appreciably between those images.
That's right.
Yeah, so
what might work great in automatic for a supported lens, you might have to dial in manual settings to get an ideal.
Yeah, so if you're using, let's say, a 70 to 200 2.8 lens, as well as a 300 f4 AFS, then you'll have to use very different settings for those to get equivalent
right.
looks. The sharpening will be very different, all of those kind of things. So you're going to have to spend a little bit of time dialing mm-hmm. in those manual settings for other lenses. So just something to mm-hmm. to think about and plan ahead on.
And overall, the interface is the kind of, it's a similar setup to the way Capture One approaches files, where it has sort of a browser window on the bottom. You load an image. It does not process the NEF, or the RAW file, I should say, for display. One of the drawbacks, that in and of itself is not a drawback. You can zoom in beyond 100%, but you only get a little window in which to see the results of that zoom. It's not resizable in its current offering. It's a fairly restricted little window that you get to move around the screen, kind of like the navigator view in Photoshop.
Both of us wish it was bigger.
And you can make the image on your screen larger by increasing the size of the window. So if you have a small monitor, you're going to get a small preview, and there's no way to zoom in that image preview at all other than using the zoom tool. For some people, this might not be a problem. For others, you might find that to be incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
It just depends on what you're used to doing. And with anything, you can get used to whatever. You get your workflow down. That was something that we definitely noticed. So the interface does have a few things that need to hopefully get improved.
Yeah.
Sometimes the controls are not obvious. This is one where the controls are kind of buried in there. You have to select a particular palette.
Right.
But it does offer everything you might expect it to.
Yeah. The one last con, I think we should, we've already talked a little bit about it. If you're using a D2X like us, the price is a bit steep.
Now you're looking at $300.
Yeah. Whereas the $149, that's down in, what I would call is the reasonable range for a RAW converter.
Yeah, that's sort of going right these days.
Between about 100 and 150, some a little bit below that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just something to think about. With all of them, we've said this before, we would recommend that you download several, depending on your interest, pick out a few to look at and then download them. Take advantage of the trial periods that are offered and see what you think. Try some of this stuff out, consider some of the stuff that we've said. But make your own judgments based on your own preferences. Because
right.
there's a reason that they're all out there.
They
all have different attributes.
So, again, to sum up, who is this product for? This product is for a professional, or not a professional, but this product is for someone who not only has the supported camera, but the supported lenses. If you don't, you're just not going to get the most out of your money. If you don't have either the supported camera or the supported lenses, this is probably not for you. If you do have a lot of these lenses, and the complete list is again available from the DxO website, then you might want to take a look at it because it has some novel options with lens correction that the other ones don't have, and it can give you some pretty good, what we think to be pretty good results,
right?
In general, so that's our opinion.
And they're adding new modules all the time. They just put a few new ones
right.
out the last week or so.
I noticed the Sigma 30mm 1.4 has now been added.
Yeah.
I don't have that lens, but I know
just an example.
Like it. That's
but there are other ones that have been added too. So the library will increase over time.
Mm-hmm. So check it out at www.dxo.com. We should point out there is a review of this product in the Nikonian's articles or resource pages.
Right, pretty thorough one.
And one
you
of our
you can see screenshots,
the whole thing, and Neil did a great job with that review. So you can read it there. And before I forget, DxO has one really unique feature. You can save as a DNG file.
Yeah.
And in fact, it allows for simultaneous output of multiple. You can save the file as a JPEG, a TIFF, and a DNG, I think simultaneously.
You can. That's kind of cool.
In one save operation, you can save as right. three different file types. So that's kind of neat. On a downside, we found that if you save a file using another RAW converter, it may not allow you to use the lens modules, even though you took the picture with a supported camera and lens combination.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird, and we don't know why it does that, but it gives you this warning that says this might not work.
Yeah, so if you're shooting stuff in the future, and you've got DxO, and you might have something like Capture, like we have, and that's one where we saw some interference, you might want to plan as part of your workflow saving separate copies or
right.
something like that.
You'd want to.
So you end up with a file that hasn't been processed
by. You want to start with the original straight out of the camera RAW file. You don't
right.
want to use a RAW file that's been processed by a third-party application.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind.
It'll pop up a little warning thing to let you know that
right.
that's a problem if you do it. I think it'll still allow you to proceed. It's just that you're limiting some of your options,
yeah.
changing the results.
So I think that then summarizes what we
yeah.
what we have found. So
good tool.
Yeah, good tool. Again, pick one, get good at it.
Yeah.
There's no one right tool for the job, but a lot of these will do everything you need them to do. So just learn whatever one you decide to go for.
All right.
Hey, well, we sorry it's a short episode today, but you know, we had some real long ones in the past, and this makes up for it. But like we said, if everything goes well, we're looking at being able to go to that baseball game and get some press credentials for it. We'll have our live shoot for the next podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to check out all the other Nikonians podcasts at podcasts.nikonians.org. Don't forget to subscribe to us in iTunes or your RSS reader. It'll make it a lot easier in the future to not miss any episodes. And so once again, from all of us at the Nikonians family, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Image Doctors.
Yep, and we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.